For decades, Elizabeth Elliot has influenced many people through her books, timeless teaching, and courageous faith. She shares with us what she's learned as a daughter, wife, mother, and missionary on this radio program, Gateway to Joy.
The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you again today about the shaping of a Christian family. That's the title of my latest book, and it is the story of the kind of home my parents established for us. My father's sense of responsibility for his family could hardly have been stricter. It seemed at times an overwhelming burden, and he suffered under its weight. There were lessons of trust in God, of casting all his care on him, of receiving the all-sufficient strength God promises, that took him years to learn, even though he knew by heart the relevant scripture passages. Often I heard him repeat the words which had been given him as a college student grappling with the most momentous decision of his life. My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. My father, whose name was Philip E. Howard, Jr., knew his own weakness. He was to need a great deal of that divine strength in order to be obedient to the special command to fathers, bring your children up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Bring them up means much more than merely allow them to grow. Bringing up children is a task. It is positive action. The keys speak of safety and protection. The keys in that chapter in Isaiah 22 that speaks of the father being the one who holds the keys and the father being like a peg on whom all the weight of the family is to hang. That's from Isaiah 22:22-24. The peg speaks of firmness, strength, stability, and something not usually to the modern male's taste, staying put. A peg has to stay put, doesn't it? The father is the priest in the home. This means standing in the presence of God for others. It means making sacrifices on the behalf of others. In a deep spiritual sense, the father stands in the place of God in the home. He is his representative, the visible sign of his presence, his love, his care. You know the story about the little child who was afraid of the dark. And when his father came in to comfort him, he told him, God is with you. But the little child said, but I want somebody with skin on. He wants the father to be there in the dark, his weight felt, sitting on the bed, his hand on the child's hand, his voice audible. His own father's arms are all he yet knows of the everlasting arms. As a child grows, he's conscious of more than the physical presence. He watches everything the father does and tries his best to imitate it exactly. He stands by the mirror and watches him shave. He puts on daddy's shoes. He jumps to place his own little feet in daddy's footprints in the sand, lugs his briefcase, tries out his hammer or his computer, wants to sit on his lap and steer the car. No wonder Paul writes, set an example in speech, in life, in love, in faith, and in purity. Be diligent in these matters. Give yourself wholly to them so that everyone may see your progress. Watch your life and doctrine closely. Persevere in them, because if you do, you will save both yourself and your hearers. Those words are from 1 Timothy 4:12 and 15 and 16. They're from a letter to a young pastor, but I think they apply perfectly also to a father. Now another matter about my father, his honesty. My father was honest to a fault. And the only way for parents to establish a child's trust is to be absolutely truthful. The establishment of a child's trust in God begins with his trust in the word of his parents. My father regarded untruth in any form as one of the carnal weapons which Christians ought never to use. He listed some commonly accepted forms of untruth: exaggerated advertising, overstatements to make an impression, withholding certain important aspects of the truth in business transactions, lest a buyer lose interest, cheating railroads on tickets or customs officers on imports, so-called white lies, told with the false idea that good may come, saying different things about the same matter to different people to avoid trouble or gain advantage, little dishonesties which are so common in business and which are excused because, quote, everybody does them, unquote, as though the multiplication of evil makes it right. My father told us a story of a boy who learned very early to trust his father's word implicitly and to obey instantly. He was playing one day on the railroad tracks. His father saw that a train was coming and had not time to rush to the boy's rescue. He called out to him to lie down at once between the rails. Without question or hesitation, the boy did so. The train roared over his head, leaving him uninjured. This was a solemn lesson to us in trusting the word of our Father and doing instantly what he told us to do. I wish I could say we were always instantly obedient. We weren't. But I can say with certainty that none of us ever had cause to doubt our parents' truthfulness. Our father was truthful and conscientious almost to a fault. As Mother observed, relative to their refusal to play the Santa Claus game with us, his keen sense of honesty may have been gleaned partly from his grandfather, Henry Clay Trumbull's book, A Lie Never Justifiable. Ironically, perhaps, the Trumbull family, my paternal grandmother's family, was noted for wild and colorful exaggeration. I remember when my grandfather accidentally broke a teacup, my grandmother's descriptions was, he simply threw it on the floor. Well, we all knew Grandma, that she was an exaggerator. When she, a small, frail old lady, fell against a large bookcase, she assured us that she had shoved it at least a foot. Ours is a God of truth. Satan is the father of lies. How often we see parents not only evade the truth, but lie openly to their children. What could be more destructive of a child's moral fabric? Recently, my husband and I saw a young mother hurrying through an airport, a baby in her arms, a pocketbook and a carry-on bag over her shoulder, a screaming 2-year-old in tow. As she passed us, we heard her say, "You see that trash can over there? You quit that screaming, or I'll dump you into that trash can." The awful threat hadn't the least effect. The child had learned that his mother doesn't tell him the truth. Guess what? He kept on screaming. Failure to carry through when something has been forbidden may not be called lying, but when a child knows he can wheedle his parents until they give in, he is being programmed not to trust their word. If a child asks why about something he has no business knowing, and the parents fabricate a reason, instead of straightforwardly telling him he does not need an answer, they're instructing him to fabricate. Truthfulness is the foundation of faith. My father and mother laid a sure foundation for us in the trustworthiness of their own word. It was their word. It was to be trusted. If they said it, we knew it was true. They were not so foolish, however, as to think that they had to explain everything. Do you hear young parents explaining needlessly why they're asking their children to do this or not to do that? Often when we asked why, we got "never mind" for an answer, or "we'll see," which usually meant that when they had seen, a no would be forthcoming. They didn't think it a good thing to explain all of their reasons or their actions to us when we were small. It's an unnecessary waste of time, for one thing, for the reasoning merely satisfies the child anyway. But more importantly, it does make it difficult later on for the child to accept what God says without explanation. He must learn to trust the person, to believe the word, and to let the matter rest there, even when reasons are hidden, a hard but vital lesson for the rest of our lives. We all need to learn to trust the character of God, the one who is truth, to believe his word, and to let the matter rest with him. We don't need explanations. Because all of us are born in sin, all of us are rebellious, some more than others. Some children seem to be born sweet and compliant. Others are called strong-willed when what they really are is merely willful, governed by will without yielding to reason, obstinate, perverse, stubborn, as my brother Phil was in his high chair when he refused to drink his milk. Mother's steadfast insistence on obedience was not for her personal victory over a, quote, strong will, but rather to strengthen her small son's will, to enable him to will against himself. That is, to do the thing he ought to do before doing the thing he wanted to do. Very important lesson for children to learn. Many of us never learned it when we were children, and it is a tough lesson when we're adults, to do what we ought to do before we do the thing we want to do. How many of us have remained willful, selfish, and immature because we never got that lesson in childhood? May God help us to train our children in godly principles.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Through Gates of Splendor and The Path of Loneliness, Finding Your Way Through the Wilderness to God. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.